Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast with over 6 million unique listeners in 177 countries. This is Jason Henricks, your host for the day, with good friend and co-host JP Nichols and our frequent contributor, Theodora Lau. Last week on the show, we talked about the financial wellness pandemic. Today, we're going to talk about doing good using technology and some of the challenges faced by community banks. Historically, community banks have played a vital role in their communities, thus the name community banks. But they're now losing in some of the digital arms race. We're going to talk about how technology can be used for good, what some banks are doing to respond to this, and we'll end the second half of the show with David Reiling, CEO of Sunrise Bank, and his new book, FinTech for Good. So today's show is brought to you by Village Capital, one of the most active fintech accelerators in the world. Village Capital is recruiting startups for its FinTech and Financial Health Accelerator program that will be taking place October to December of this year. Gain access to their networks of investors, mentors, potential customers, and other founders. Village Capital does not charge, and it does not take equity to participate in the Accelerator program. Village Capital will host a series of community events around the country to recruit startups. Village Capital will be in Atlanta April 22nd, Miami on the 29th, Los Angeles on June 6th, Seattle on June 18th, and Columbus on June 26th. The team will also be hanging out with me at South by Southwest this coming weekend, Empire FinTech later in the year, FinTech South, Finovate Spring, and many others. If you're working on financial health or FinTech and would like to learn more about Village Capital and its accelerator program, go to vilcap.com. Applications open on Thursday, June 6. JP, what's going on in the conference world?
Well, I'm glad that Village Capital is a sponsor. They are somebody that is doing good with FinTech. You mentioned South by Southwest already. It's right around the corner, literally, starting this weekend. And as you said, you'll have some of the folks from Village Capital hanging out with you because you're hosting the annual FinTech Luminaires reception, where entrepreneurs, executives, investors, and influencers will all gather before the madness of South By on March 9th for great cocktails and conversation.
Yeah, well, and excited, not only Village Capital is a sponsor there, Sunrise Bank annually shows up and is a sponsor. And the second half of the show is brought to us by Rocket Dollar. They're also a sponsor, and they're creating a level of access many don't see. And every year, that team, the folks from Yodlee and from Customer, they make it a phenomenal event. So if you're interested in attending, send me a DM or tweet at us at BreakingBanks1. We're happy to get you a VIP invitation.
Well, Ed, you are busy. You got a lot of things coming up. You and Chris Nichols, who is the Chief Strategy Officer at Center State Bank, you will both be at the S&P Global 8th Annual Community Bankers Conference in Dallas. That's April 9th and 10th. And you're going to talk about what banks need to do to prepare for 2025. And I think that's part of what we're going to talk about today. Once again, Provoke Media is the podcast partner of Seamless Middle East. That's coming up right around that same time, 10th and 11th of April in Dubai. It's a dynamic and large-scale exhibition featuring the worlds of e-commerce, retail, payments, fintech, and identity. And you can register at seamless-expo.com/ME. And finally, our good friends at the Financial Brand are putting on the Financial Brand Forum again this year. It's April 15th through 17th in Las Vegas. It's the world's largest and most elite conference on marketing, CX, data analytics, and digital transformation in the banking industry. Over 2,000 senior leaders and more than 750 financial institutions will attend the Financial Brand Forum in 2019, and you can get your tickets today at financialbrandforum.com. And as always, if you have something you want to share with our audience, you can find us on Twitter at BreakingBanks1 or email us at info@provoke.fm. So, Jason, There's an article in the Wall Street Journal I want to talk about, and Theo Lau, welcome back to the show. I'd like to get your perspective on this too. It's called The Problem for Small Town Banks. People want high-tech services. And it talks about what we've talked about a lot on the show, the consolidation of the industry. We've gone from over 15,000 banks to about 4,600 in the last 30 years. And those 4,600, well, a little less than 5,000, but 4,600 of them have less than $1 billion in assets, those smaller community banks. And today, they only hold about 6.6% of all assets combined. Now, 3 decades ago, around the same time that new laws were spurring industry consolidation, those small banks held nearly a third, 31.5% of the total assets. So their share is shrinking. And what the article goes on to talk about, and I'll bring up some of the details as we discuss this, but that they're out of touch. And yet these were the organizations, I think, that the industry held up as really being responsive and meeting the needs of the community bank. So I'd like to talk about this a little bit today and maybe start with a question. So how do community banks still add value, do good in their community if they can't be local in the community anymore?
Well, man, talk about giving us wide berth there. You know, it's interesting when we even begin to think about community and part of this change in how we all interact. And was looking at some data last week around how people are more connected via devices than they ever have been before. And I don't know if you guys use the iPhone feature that tells you how much screen time you're getting and whether it's up or down every week, you know, and I'm just horrified at how much screen time I have. Yet this data was showing people have never felt more disconnected from each other. And I think the underlying part of this is we need to think about what defines community, because community banks, you know, probably drew that based on their branch footprint historically. Mm-hmm. But that it isn't necessarily the definition of community anymore. And I don't know, Theo, how do you think about community and the challenge they face?
I agree. I think, you know, when we think about digital connectivity, it's like a blessing and a curse. You can look at it both ways, right? As much as from a banking or even, you know, in general day-to-day life perspective, we are moving towards digital, we tend to forget that not everyone is on the digital world, right? So the question becomes, if you start taking the branches away, if you start taking the community places away, there people get together and do face-to-face interaction, then where does that leave the rest of the people who are not connected online, right? We seem to forget that. And also it's the question of trust. In the old days, when deals are done with a handshake, when everyone walks into a bank, they see their banker, they know their banker. They're there not just to conduct banking services, but also together as a community, like you say. What happens when you move all of that digitally, not just from a relationship building perspective, but also protecting their assets, right? Knowing and safeguarding what they have put in place in that financial institution for the past 30, 40 years of their lives. A large part of the work is look at how do we deal with that with an aging population? And that becomes even more of a challenge, because when you remove the banker from the equation, then how do you protect the seniors' assets digitally?
Well, I'm not confident to take the counter view that the personal interaction with the banker was necessarily actually any better for them. If anything, I think we confuse this idea of being personable, which a friendly person does and a smile and a handshake and empathy does well, but it doesn't necessarily do a good job of personalized, which a lot of people really do need, right? Personalized alerts and, you know, our bills being paid as they come in. You know, we've had on the show before silver bills, which you introduced me to back at your AARP days, you know, who I'm a huge fan of and soon to be a customer of, unfortunately. But you know, this idea of how do we use tech to better enable that? But you struck at something that I think we need to spend some time on, which is this idea of access as well. That, you know, community banks were accessible because they were in the community. And for large swaths of Americans and parts of the world, that online access and digital access can be the savior for some, but it isn't accessible to others.
Well, and I think that the story that is woven into this Wall Street Journal article kind of hits at that. They tell a story of National Bank in Delaware County, and it was a small community bank, and they bought some branches from Bank of America. Now, Bank of America in around 2012 was reducing their branch footprint, and the community bank saw that as a good thing. This is an opportunity for us. The big banks are getting out of town, and we're going to have a chance to acquire some of these branches. But unfortunately, what they found is they lost about half of the deposits within a year, year and a half's time, and that they took on debt to make that acquisition of those branches, and it really wasn't sustainable. So it was difficult to have the kind of technology that their customers wanted, even though they thought and maybe did also want the face-to-face within the branch. But that alone certainly wasn't enough.
But we know it can be done though, right? Like, you know, there are success stories around the country where the smaller branches, the smaller banks are able to reinvent themselves. It's a matter of seeing what it is that they need and then perhaps not eliminating the branches, but reducing the footprint and transform it to something else. I think, you know, a good friend of ours, Joe, has done exactly that.
Oh, Joe Castilla at Citizens Bank of Edmond. Yes, I mean, we've talked about that. I don't know if we talked about it on the show, but I know that's a story I like to tell when I'm with banking audiences. They had, it's a relatively small bank, about $250 million in assets. And one of their branches, they converted into a co-working space they call Vault 405. And so I think that's really smart. They've got, talk about community. They have a community of small businesses that are there on site. They all bank with the bank there. And they've reimagined and transformed that space into something that arguably is serving the community a whole lot better than another set of teller windows.
So there you have it. I think, you know, it's a matter of being, I would say, not to put it simply, but it's a matter of being thoughtful about understanding what it is that your community needs. So, for example, MX, our friends at MX last week, they put together an infographic, which I thought was pretty interesting. It talks about payday lending, and it talks about how financial institutions in general can be better alternatives to their consumers, right? It's rethinking what it is that you can do to help solve the day-to-day challenges of consumers. Because we all know that, you know, from a lending perspective, 12 million people a year, they rely on payday loans. So instead of sending your customers that you know in your community, that you know who they are, all of that over to very, very high predators, if you will, with high APRs, what is it that you can do for that consumer base?
Well, I think you made a really good point, Theo, on this being thoughtful aspect of it. And I think as an industry, it's something we don't do often enough in terms of being thoughtful and different. Because let's use Jill's example. Using a co-working space in Edmond, Oklahoma is an unmet need, right? There is no WeWork of Edmond, as far as I know, and I'm pretty sure no plans for Citizen or for Edmond WeWork anytime soon. But if you're going to do the cafe strategy and a co-working space in downtown Chicago or New York, I don't know that you're actually being thoughtful about the problem you're solving. And if we take that digitally, I think this is where a lot of community banks have fallen down, as we've become one size fits all in what we do. And we miss the opportunity that you just pointed out, that there is an unmet need right down the street. It just doesn't fit within your existing premise of, oh, these are the kinds of loans I do. I do these kinds of loans because those are the most profitable loans for me because I have very manual processes. And we don't pause and say, how could I actually recast both my strategy and the way I service things to open up new opportunities in a differentiated way? And I'll put my soapbox away now.
Well, but Jason, you bring up a good point. And as you well know, you and I were both with a group of banks recently who were looking at the small business loan problem. And they ended up talking in kind of a simple 2x2 matrix, right? You have large loans and small loans and simple loans and complex loans. And the ones that kill you are small and complex, right? So they might be very well needed. The need is dire, but maybe small in dollar amount. But if the underwriting process and the documentation and the approval process is too expensive and it becomes too complex, then you can't deliver that. And that's where these high interest rates come in and these outside players and so on. So there is a need to leverage technology to be able to meet the needs of those customers better. And again, I keep coming back to this article because I thought it really told the story pretty well, because it also compared and contrast to, you know, the vast sums of money that the large banks are spending on this. Bank of America spent $20 billion in new technology since 2012. Of course, we know the news of BB&T and SunTrust agreeing to merge last month. So they probably talk about the need to spend more on technology. So doesn't this kind of just work against the scale that the small banks can be really close to the customer, but at the same time, they increasingly need technology? How do they deal with that challenge?
I think from one aspect of it, we need to look at it beyond just that bank and the presence of financial services. Because whenever we're thinking about small towns with community banks, there's more to it than just that bank alone, right? Because it has an impact on the overall ecosystem of that community. So for example, recently, there was a similar article on Financial Times that talked about a small town in East Texas. And it was a very similar story. It's a small town. It used to, you know, be pretty well populated. And then the population shrunk because everyone moved on to the big cities. And so a few big banks became small banks. And eventually now they're saying they're going to be closing that one final bank in the community. And it impacts more than just the people not having access to banking services, because all of the ecosystem, the stores and everything else that's reliant on that bank alone, there will be an implication to the well-being of the economy, well-being of the other businesses. So it's a larger question on not just what will the community bank do and how do they leverage technology, but a bigger, I would even say a policy question on how should the local government help and sustain operations that are needed by the community.
Well, at the same time, then we get into this conundrum of the Community Reinvestment Act, and is it outdated? If we define servicing the community, meaning that we have a brick and mortar branch somewhere here, is that really what's needed?
I would argue no, but you know, I think I've long argued that the branch is a colossal waste of resources that could be better used to serve people. But it does, harken back to something Theo opened with, which is if there are people who don't have access to digital, and let's face it, with the most digital part of our banking that most of us use is probably our credit card or debit card. In terms of making payments, maybe a wallet or a smartphone to use those. But there's a big chunk of the country and the world that still actually banks using good old fiat currency in its tangible form. And so if you take that community bank out of the center there, you're actually also restricting a huge amount of commerce if it is very much a community that's driven by the exchange of, paper-based money. How do you go change bills and, get that accessed into the system in ways you can pay your other vendors? It really does become a big challenge for those communities if we can't get them over the digital divide. So, Dio, I want to turn back to you. Do you think the answer is, do we need to, ensure that there's a community-based bank there, or do we need to get people over the digital divide?
I would say it's not mutually exclusive, right? Because cash deserts do exist outside of major cities if we continue on without thoughtfully thinking about how to bring people into the digital economy. And as quote unquote digital as the US is, there are still, like we mentioned, large pockets of population where they don't have access to high-speed internet, where they don't have access to broadband, right? So until we resolve that, we need to make sure that we don't end up in our digital transformation journey excluding the people that need access to cash and need access to financial services. So we are and will be for the foreseeable future, unfortunately, in a transition state where we need to think about those questions. Because it's not a matter of, like you say, you know, what kind of services will we provide in big cities where you already have access to digital, where you already have an access to different banking services, is the ones that are being left behind.
Well, and I think there's a flip side to this too, and that is, are we defining community in the right way? Jason, you hinted at this earlier. I mean, look at some of the small banks that have redefined what their community is.
You know, one of the banks, you know, we love our Midwestern banks, especially being in the Midwest, right? Who there's a great propensity towards the community banks. And you know, one of our founding members of our consortium, Lincoln Savings Bank, you know, did have that astounding aha, which is the population of Iowa is growing at something circa 0.4%, which is not exactly growing. And most of that is only in a few metropolitan areas and actually has seen some years of contraction. And so they stopped and thought about it. It's like, well, wait a second, we either need to figure out how we're grabbing disproportionate share from other banks, which seems, you know, a bit like a land war in Asia. I think JP, you and I have been a bit of a Princess Bride kick lately, and you know, good 80s movies references, but you know, mired in the land war in Asia, which everyone knows is not a winning tactic, or do they rethink what community is? And you know, had built out this initiative around how do they actually become a bank of choice for fintech startups, right? So taking on this banking as a service and innovating at the business model level, not just the technology they deploy, but how they're deploying it, who they're actually letting control that customer experience. It's been interesting how they've defined that. You know, some of the other banks, you know, that we work with define their community and customer segments in different ways. And you know, I'd forgotten how powerful this phrase is until you know, you reminded me how much you liked it. But it's not really a strategy unless someone would actually take the opposite strategy, right? And for a good reason. It's just common sense if we all are following the same thing. So for a bank to think strategically how it defines community is really important. Otherwise, you know, we're going to continue to see, in my opinion, this decline driven by the fact that these community banks are undifferentiated in what they provide. They can't innovate and provide the technical resources that their customers are looking for, that really powerful technology that underlies a great experience, right? They're not going to spend $20 billion on that. And they're going to see their costs continue to go up as the profitability goes down. And you know, we're going to see more and more of them go away and leave not just cash deserts, but community deserts.
So I think, you know, and along with that reinvention and rethinking what community is and how to define it, right? One of the examples I remember that the Sunrise team talked about last year is one of the distinct characteristic, if you will, of the community that they serve is the immigrants, right? And so when you're thinking about serving immigrant community, what are some specific services that that specific community will need? Would it be like something around transfer payments? Would it be something around establishing, you know, some basic financial services for people who don't have a thick or rich credit history? And so when we go back again to thinking about how do we become more thoughtful, how do we become more in tune with the community, quote unquote, that we serve, and how do you define that community? I think that that's one key to success. Like you say, there's no one size fits all, but understanding deeply that people that you serve and understanding what it is that they need could potentially differentiate them from all the other big banks.
Yeah. In knowing, you know, Sunrise, I actually went to high school not far down the street, and you walk down and you see the number of check cashers that are there, and they haven't gone away. And the problem wasn't that there wasn't a branch right around the corner. You know, Sunrise has been there for decades and decades. It's how these services are utilized and the role they fill. If we take our typical banker perspective and continue to deploy it, you know, we're going to stay stuck very much in this business as usual while the rest of the world is changing so dramatically. And I think that's actually what's going to lead to a good number of community banks being wiped out if they're not able to begin to change to much more of a customer-driven approach.
Well, I think you're right. And We'll hear more about Sunrise Banks coming up in the second half of the show, Jason, as you talk with our CEO, Dave Reiling. And I also think that, shameless plug alert, this is exactly the reason why we formed the Alloy Labs Alliance, so that these banks can work together to share the risks and share the cost to be able to address these technology needs at the same time they're trying to serve their local communities. So Theo Lau, as always, thanks for joining us, and we'll be right back with more Breaking Banks right after this.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
The Voice America Live Events channel is here now to showcase your corporate, individual, or organization's live event. Visit voiceamerica.com/live events to see all of our past live events and find out more. Whether it's a multi-day conference, special speaker, or single-day event, we've got everything to make your event a success. We can do a few hours or a few days. For more information about taking your event to the next level, call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or email info@voiceamerica.com. Again, that's Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or send us an email to info@voiceamerica.com. Voice America is where you are and where you want to be. Join us around the globe as we broadcast live from some of the most interesting events available. Don't forget to view all our live events, including on-demand access to past events that you may have missed, by visiting voiceamerica.com/live events.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag #BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
And we are back. Welcome back to Breaking Banks. This segment is brought to you by Rocket Dollar. Rocket Dollar allows you to take your old 401k or IRA, invest in things that you care about, no longer restricted to stocks and bonds. With Rocket Dollar, you can take advantage of investment opportunities in real estate, private equity, or any other asset class allowed by the IRS. The choice is yours. Rocket Dollar has made it simple to track all of your investments in one place with their newly launched investment tracker. Regardless of what you decide to invest in, the Rocket Dollar account allows holders to track all of their investments accurately. Rocket Dollar is also changing the way you pay for a retirement account. By simply charging $15 a month with a one-time sign-up fee of $360, it doesn't matter whether you fund your account with $10,000 or $500,000. Their pricing is the most transparent in the industry. If you're looking to get more out of your retirement savings, visit rocketdollar.com and use the code BREAKING50 at registration for $50 off your Rocket Dollar account. Now, excited to have David Reiling, CEO of Sunrise Banks, social entrepreneur, and now author of the book Fintech for Good on the show. Now, David, is Fintech for Good your first book?
It is. It is my very first book.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations. I definitely enjoyed reading it. And so, you know, one of the things I find interesting is, you know, you're the CEO of a community bank. Community banks have always played a really special role in their community, and that's, you know, what this episode is all about. Can you talk about how Sunrise over the years has evolved how it thinks about community?
Sure. I mean, Sunrise Banks really started off in a very microcosm, a very small bank, you know, 12, 14 million in assets, focused on an urban core community that was mainly immigrants, and just ingrained itself into the community. Our staff reflected the people that we served, and our impact in that community was significant, and it grew. There were times that as the bank got a bit larger, that there was more and more communities within the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul that needed the same type of engagement. And so we kind of went branch by branch and bank by bank, if you will, to serve those. And then in time, I got really tired by the slowness and the pace in which we could actually have positive change and impact. And so that's really where the technology side and the fintech comes in, as to how can we leverage technology to not only make people's lives better in terms of the urban core of Minneapolis and St. Paul, but how can we do this nationally and even globally, leveraging fintech?
Well, interesting that you'd quickly realize the branch can no longer be the center of the universe if you want to actually be universal. And I don't think we talked a lot in the first half of the show about this idea that historically, you know, community banks have defined community based on the branch footprint. As you started to look at technology, has that changed how you think about community and the communities you serve? Are you focused on some of these immigrant populations, regardless of geographically, or what characteristics do you use when you think about community?
Yeah, so we really thought of community as a geographic or a place-based, you know, branch-driven in the very beginning. And we still refer to more or less our two business lines as place-based and people-based. And so community can exist in both of those spheres. It just takes on slightly a different definition. So in the place-based, obviously, that is geographically, the people-based can be anywhere. And there's just a tie, or there's some relationship that's being developed either directly with the bank or through a partner, in which we're developing community, whether it's helping people build credit, get access to an emergency loan, build savings, whatever that may be. There's some aspect of that in which we're building community in relationships that define what we consider community.
So I'm curious, what was the first piece of fintech you either adopted or attempted to adopt? And, you know, what did you learn in this process?
Yeah, so really the first real leap into fintech was getting into the prepaid card business. And that originated by me in my car in one of the bank's parking lots one summer day, watching three Hmong women who were recent immigrants, Laotians, at our ATM, trying to figure out how to get like their electronic benefits, their food stamps, and get the cash off of that card. And I watched them, and they tried and they tried, and they finally figured it out. And subsequent to that, they held classes on how to use the ATM at our machine, and basically educated an entire community on how to use that specific piece of technology. It was then that I knew that how this piece of technology, this card, they're not afraid of it. If they just know how to use it, they can access all sorts of different things. And that was the platform, or the concept right there, to, okay, how can we scale this thing? How can we impact all sorts of folks who are un and underbanked with this piece of plastic and in this light technology, what was called stored value cards at the time, and then the prepaid card business.
Yeah. So started with SBCs, which I think a lot of people, you know, quickly overlook as an important progression, and so much now does run on prepaid rails. Now, if you fast forward to today in what you do, what other types of technology has Sunrise Banks adopted and started to roll out?
Yeah, so the technologies now are really more holistic. As we thought of prepaid as a business line, it's now really the half of the bank in terms of our people-based business is centered around financial technology, and specifically serving those fintechs that have a good business model, but also it has some good component. There's some consumer benefit to it. And so for us, it's how do we provide services to those fintechs that they can plug and play with us in a quick amount of time, because obviously time is very precious to them in terms of the amount of money they have, to get them up and into market and do so responsibly in a compliant way, in which that they can, you know, serve the customers to the best of their ability. So it's really begun an integrated part of the bank in terms of how we do business. And so those technologies range from, you know, what we have on our how our database systems work, to APIs, and specifically with customers, we've integrated into, as it's in the book, companies like SelfLender and TrueConnect in that small dollar loan space.
So I'm curious, is there resistance, or did you have to overcome resistance as your people-based are very much geographic and probably by extension branch-centric in how they think about delivery. As you move to this tech-enabled version that is, or sorry, it's the place-based was the branch-based. As you move to people-based, was there resistance, right? Because now that we're talking about tech and less face-to-face, you know, that can have a pretty big impact on your culture.
Yeah, definitely. So I have to say, though, that the culture of Sunrise is one of an entrepreneurial organization. So every day there's a little dose of fear and excitement here in terms of what we're into and willing to try and innovate on. And so I would say it wasn't that bad relative to inside the bank itself and the culture, because change and innovation was really just a part of who we are. The place where we really had to break some of those barriers down is when in the various different associations that we play in, whether it's the Community Development Bankers Association, which is a group of CDFI banks, or the Global Alliance of Banking on Values, which is a group of about 53 banks, financially, socially, and environmentally sustainable focus, in changing their perspectives in terms of what is the definition of relationship and how can you have the most impact possible under this kind of new or different type of definition of relationship.
Well, I want to pull out something you mentioned in the book right at the outset, setting this up. You talk about defining the success of a business commonly being done in terms of financial success. But that paradigm is changing in no small part because of technology. So how do you think fintech specifically is starting to change around our definition of what success looks like? Because it sounds like that's a pretty big, important cultural key to both how Sunrise operates and the people you choose to partner with.
Yeah, definitely. It is really a key for us in terms of kind of that values alignment as to what is our fintech partner value and what do we value. And when we have a match there, we know we have a good, strong partnership and likely a very successful business model about to happen because of the fact that the value that we're creating is not just economic. There's a social value, not only for Sunrise, but for the fintech and for that particular customer. That customer is getting value in their life that they can measure in dollars and cents, but there's also that reduction of stress, the reduction of fear, the more in control, those types of aspects which are really beneficial. And we not only see that from the consumer standpoint, if you will, or the end user, but from the corporate standpoint. So from the fintech corporation or from Sunrise, you know, living those values, having that ability to earn more than, let's say, an economic paycheck, if you can earn that emotional paycheck as well, now you're finding meaning in your work. You're likely attracting people with like values. You're attracting talent, actually, that's really pretty fabulous. And they buy into the mission and the values of the organization because it matches theirs. And all of a sudden, you have an organization that's moving in a much faster and more direct route in terms of what you want to accomplish in this world. And as a result, there are people that are happier, and you're not just multiplying the margin or the profitability, you're multiplying the mission at the same time. And I use that, the multiplier as opposed to an addition sign, because once you really kind of put yourself out there in terms of, hey, we're looking for people who are aligned with these values to impact the world, the consumer, or business this way, you'd be amazed at how many people come looking for you.
Well, you know, last week we had Jennifer Tescher on the show, and we were talking about the financial wellness pandemic, this idea that, you know, it is like the flu traveling in a pandemic in terms of people are getting sick or not better. And I was shocked by the number of people who reached out either on Twitter or DMs or emails, and don't want to sell anyone out, but some people who I know their financial situation, and frankly, they're bankers, you'd think they'd be good at this, but saying how much it resonated, this financial stress they feel. Let me pause and let you respond to that.
Yeah, I mean, we see it all over. We see it with our own employees. We see it in our customers, in the small businesses we serve. The fact is that financial stress is really real, and particularly in the workplace is one place where we've targeted in which to try to make an impact. And so whether it's, you know, for example, Sunrise offers peanut butter to our employees so they can manage their student loan, their student debt load. In addition to that, we offer a small dollar loan product called True Connect, which is also in the book. So there's some access to emergency funds. It's also a methodology to keep people out of payday lending. And so we're looking for example, just specifically in that employer, can we help employers help their employees, you know, reduce the financial stress? And we can actually measure kind of our net, our NPS or net performance scores in regards to what that looks like. And just kind of comments and feedback that we get constantly is the need for these tools to reduce that financial stress, making things easy and transparent, and trying to keep them out of situations where that can cause them real pain. So whether that, I mean, obviously there's things that are uncontrollable like health or accidents, but making decisions around, you know, should I borrow from my 401k or should I try to take out a small loan? We could help in those particular cases and steer people into a responsible solution. But I would tell you that financial stress is everywhere. And quite frankly, whether you're on the lower income side or the higher income side, it's really the lifestyle you lead, the decisions that you make, which either create the stress or your ability to control it.
Yeah. So you tell five financial tales in the book, and you brought up Get Peanut Butter is actually the first tale, which is around student debt. And disclaimer, you know, we're talking about Get Peanut Butter, and David Aronson is both a friend. I spent a good amount of time with the company. I think I actually am the person who introduced your team when they were visiting me in Chicago to David and a few others in that space. Now, when David and I first met, he had talked about this idea of, you know, for listeners, Get Peanut Butter is a lot like the 401k match that an employer might offer as a benefit. But in this case, it actually is doing a match that goes alongside your student debt, or at least offers a direct deduction to pay off your student loans, because their aha, and there's a few players in this space, was there is a lot of student debt, and that burden keeps a lot of employees from being able to take advantage of things like a 401k contribution because their debt service is so high. And one of the things David educated me on was this isn't just about marketing to attract and retain employees, but it has a dramatic impact on employee health and how stress plays in and their ability to show up. I'm curious, what have you learned with some of the things you've done, like True Accord and with Get Peanut Butter, as you've rolled it out internally? What have you learned about your own employee engagement mission?
Yeah, so we're really finding out, and we just rolled Peanut Butter out, and so our initial studies are coming back in, but what we've kind of anecdotally surmised from talking with our employees is, first of all, they appreciate it, that an employer thought enough to think about what their specific needs were. And I would say in these instances, their student loan debt is foremost financially on their mind. And it is high up there with, you know, care of their family and so forth. This is just something they've been struggling with for such a long time. Any relief, any way to look at it differently, know that they're paying the right loan at the right time, or the consolidation, even that reassurance in some cases where they went in and did the analysis of their student loan debt, said, I'm doing everything I can, just reduces the stress down. And in some cases, there were some refinances and some different options for people to take some action. So it's up to them to do that at this particular point in time. Sunrise is now contemplating whether we provide a match like we do our 401k in this space. And so we really have to, because some of those data we know and some we don't, we really don't know of our employees how many people still have student loan debt. We know we are attracting a younger workforce, but we're kind of hoping with this launch we can gather more data, understand our workforce from a student loan debt standpoint, and really start to dig into what are the avenues in which we can impact them for financial health. I think there's one other step that Sunrise can play very easily alongside a peanut butter and alongside other folks, and that is I think legislatively, whether it's a tax, much like a 401k, if we can get the same tax treatment, all of a sudden we're going to have benefits that really encourage employers to offer this. It makes it just so much easier to kind of put some economic incentive around that, not only for the betterment of that consumer with student debt, but for the business and I think for the American economy, as this debt of trillions of dollars just kind of weighs us down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you talk about the younger demographic, but if you look across the U.S., you know, one in four Americans is still paying down student debt regardless of age, because we have close to $2 trillion of it standing out there. And the amount of debt that people graduate with is, you know, gone up almost double in the last 10 years. And I think, you know, part of what you bring out is important is this isn't just about the social welfare of an individual. It has a huge impact on, you know, that person's ability to buy goods, to buy homes, to do
other things
that drive, you know, the commerce and the economy, you know, that we have. And so I'm curious, as you look at, and I don't want to, you know, tell all of the other stories, what are the other important themes that you think about when you were starting to write this, or when you think about the impact you can have on an individual? What areas would you focus your technological search to improve their lives?
Gosh, you know, the first thing that I would say, and one of the motivations that really inspired me to write this book, was to tell a story of fintech. And so many times it's put in a light of, hey, this fintech got so much funding and this and that. But the fact is I'm seeing fintechs that are doing so much good out there. Their actual impact to consumers is significant. And so, and that can be in all sorts of number of ways, whether it's in the student loan space, in a small dollar lending space from an emergency, helping people manage their debt. And so I really love the fact that financial technology companies are really finding ways to help consumers, to help small businesses, more than just the financial bottom line. There's more to it then. So that I really wanted to tell that story that fintech can be good. Not to mention, I get a little tired with the fact of, you know, the old checking and savings account. I just think we need new design and new ideas to come into play in the financial sector. And so other than that, I would love to see all sorts of different, and I'll call it disruption, but innovation in the spaces with fintech. I think there's a big play to be had in credit bureaus and credit reporting. Obviously, it's kind of a mainstay of the book, if you will, in terms of helping people from all different angles either improve their credit score, become credit visible, not having any credit history, or if you're new to this country, how do you establish yourself? How can we get immigrants up and running faster and more productive in our economy? And not maybe just the U.S. economy, but any economy where migration is taking place. That's helpful to everybody. So I think there's, and again, maybe I'll dovetail a little bit off of Jennifer Tesher in terms of her passion around savings. I think there's a lot to be done in the savings and that resiliency of the individual. And we found people can save at all sorts of different levels. It just may be giving them some of the right tools, making it easy, simple, giving them access to those type of accounts. There's just so much to be done. And so I look at this field and I almost don't know where to start, but if there were some basics, I would say credit history, basic access and convenience, ease of use in terms of transaction accounts and savings are great places to be.
And so Chris Skinner and I did an episode late last year, and we were talking about the latest cohort, if you will, of the challenger banks. And he was poking a little bit of fun. It's like, you know, do you think we've come all that far in the last 10 years since Dan and I had started Perk Street in 2008, one of the first challenger banks? And yep. I was a bit surprised when I pushed him, as he works with a lot of challengers, that they actually haven't gone nearly as far as we think they should. And I'm hearing that same spirit that I think we haven't necessarily made our savings tools and our transaction accounts better and have more utility. We've just really made them more digital and prettier. Would you agree with that?
You know, I would agree with that. I think there is so much room to go further. in the way that we actually kind of conceptualize what savings is, you know, we think of the piggy bank and we got to add something in, and, you know, EarnUp, I think, takes a different, they think of it in terms of your ability to earn as opposed to your ability to save. I think there's huge amounts of savings for people, whether you call it economic savings or health savings. Once you intersect financial technology and, let's say, health, physical health together, one person's ability to work more productively, efficiently, longer will allow them to earn more, potentially save in that definition. Even if a person is healthier, allows them to be more productive. I just think there's all sorts of ways that we can think of savings in outside of just the silos of this is financial and this is health, and so forth.
Well, certainly our stress levels don't distinguish between, oh, that's my financial stress versus my physical or emotional stress. Right. Is it, when it gets down to the individual, it's all one big painful bundle when we deal with this. Is we're getting close to time. I'm curious, where do you see Sunrise going next? Is your leading part of this charge in both using technology and more specifically seeing the ability to use technology for good?
Yeah. Sunrise is really headed in a direction we've really kind of found ourselves in an employer space. And how do we partner with financial technology companies in which we can serve businesses and their employees through voluntary employee benefits? It's a place that we've happened that is really underserved. Employee benefits are very much focused on middle to upper income people. I think there's a suite of products and services that can help people save, borrow, invest, manage their financial stress along with their paycheck in a very integrated way. And there's a lot of uses of AI in that space and so forth. And so I think there's a whole field for Sunrise in that employer channel, if you will.
Well, and that's a great way that I love how you're thinking about innovation, not just from technology, but innovating the business model in this B2B to C. If you're really going to have impact, you don't need just the benefit of technological leverage. You're getting channel leverage as well.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Scale matters.
Scale matters. Where can people buy their copy of FinTech for Good?
FinTech for Good can be found on both Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
I thought you were going to say, you know, all jokes aside, they had to come into the branch in order to get it, because it seems like every time you want to do something, you have to come into the branch.
Definitely. And you have to meet me personally and shake my hand, and then we have to do some identification, KYC, and
Do I need to do a signature card, a wet signature, in order to get my copy? I guess that's called an
autograph.
Definitely.
You know, yeah, right. Well, we've advanced. We used to have fingerprints. We're getting better.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you for being on the show. Special thanks to Theo Lau for joining us in the first segment. JP and I really enjoyed the discussion with her as well. If you have something to say about today's show or ideas for a future show, we love your feedback. You can reach us on Twitter at BreakingBanks1 or email us at info@provoke.fm. And if you're interested in sponsoring a show or a segment, drop us a line. Our sponsors not only make the show possible, but they also help set the direction and the tempo of what the community is finding industry. And I know we say this every week, but if you've enjoyed the show, share it with a friend or take a minute and give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us spread the word and continue to grow the audience. And that's going to be a wrap for this week. And actually, David, I will be seeing part of your team down at South by Southwest in our Luminaries party this weekend. Am I going to see you down there as well?
I am unfortunately not going to be able to do it, as I'm double booked with my son's birthday party and another event. But the fact is enjoy yourself. I'm wishing I could be with you this weekend at South By.
Well, hopefully next year. And that's all for this week's Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.